This is Ed Angelus. We're now on season 2, episode 17 of this podcast, and this time we'll be discussing a very interesting topic about FinTech Adoption Index. And we'll also be featuring a very relevant and compelling book entitled 3F Future FinTech Framework. For today's podcast episode, we have invited the brilliant author of this remarkable book, Mr. Karthik Swaminathan, who has over 2 decades of experience on financial services and also an avid financial technology enthusiast. Presently, he is also the founder of Fintastech Group in Mumbai, India, where he consults on innovative and go-to-market financial products. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. McKinsey surveyed more than 10,000 digitally active people in Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, Singapore, the United Kingdom, and the United States to better understand the overall rate of fintech adoption. Which users are adopting which products, and the outlook for future usage. Financial technologies are moving in on the traditional financial services landscape, and their products and services are catching on. For traditional financial service companies, and this includes banks, insurance, as well as wealth and asset management companies, the risk of disruption is real. The survey shows that 15.5% of digitally active consumers have used at least 2 fintech products within the last 6 months. As awareness of the available products and service increases, adoption rates could double within the year. Hong Kong has the highest rate of fintech use of all markets surveyed. That's equivalent to 29.1%. And the United States has the second highest adoption rate at 16.5%, followed by Singapore at 14.7%. The United Kingdom at 14.3%, Australia at 13%, and Canada at 8.2%. As fintech makes customers' lives easier, traditional providers will need to step up their efforts to serve customers just as effectively. Traditional financial services firms can learn from how fintechs think about the customer proposition and how they are harnessing technology to deliver value and convenience. Identifying which customers are most at risk from the new competition and developing new products and services to retain them is a must-do first step. Early fintech adopters tends to be younger, higher income customers with adoption concentrated in high development urban areas such as New York, Hong Kong, and London. These users are some of banking and insurance most valuable customers, and traditional providers must reconsider the way they meet these users' needs if they want to stem the flight to fintech. And this will require re-evaluating their own multi-channel strategies, as well as exploring partnerships with fintech providers. But fintech use are quite spread in major urban areas. And Singapore is at 14.7% for this one, followed by Sydney at 16.3%, and then London at 25.1%, and next to this is Hong Kong at 29.1%, New York at the top at 33.1%, and this percentage are calculated based on the digitally active population. Fintech is revolutionizing the way we pay for goods and services, transfer money between accounts, and send it overseas. These three activities are the most used fintech services according to the survey of McKinsey, and are followed closely by savings and investment products such as online stock broking or spread betting, online budgeting and planning, as well as online investments, equities, and rewards crowdfunding, together with peer-to-peer or marketplace lending. While they do exist, health insurance premium aggregators, together with the car insurance telematics, and peer-to-peer online borrowing websites are among the less commonly used services. Most used fintech services are the following, based on the recent survey. Money transfer payments at 17.6%, and this includes the use of non-banks to transfer money, online foreign exchange, and overseas remittances. Savings and investment is at 16.7%, and this includes online stock brokering, online investments, equities and rewards, crowdfunding, and P2Ps. Insurance at 7.7%, which includes car insurance with telematics, as well as healthcare premium aggregators. And borrowing and lending is at 5.6%, and this is borrowing via the P2P websites. The relative use in setting up an account was overwhelmingly cited by respondents in the survey conducted by McKinsey as the top reason for using fintech. More attractive rates, access to different products and services, and a better online experience were also popular responses. But the main reason is the simplicity involved in using fintech products and services that is driving adoption. While many traditional providers are grappling with how to replace cumbersome, outdated, and time-consuming account establishment forms and processes, fintechs are enabling customers to set up services with as little as one click. And here are the top 7 reasons for using fintech according to the respondents. The topmost reason is that it is easy to set up an account at 43.4%. More attractive rates and fees at 15.4%. Access to different products and services at 12.4%. Better online experience and functionality at 11.2%. Better quality of service at 10.3%. More innovative products than available from traditional bank at 5.5%. And greater level of trust than the traditional institutions at 1.8%. While the ease of use of remains fintech's key selling point, it's a lack of awareness that is the main impediment to its adoption. The majority of non-fintech users claim they don't know such products exist. Other respondents feel they don't need the products or somehow they prefer traditional financial service providers. Interestingly, trust has not been a major obstacle to fintech use, with only 11.2% of respondents saying they don't trust the products. And here are the top 6 reasons for not using fintech according to the survey conducted by McKinsey. Topmost is they were not aware that this product or functionality existed at 53.2%. They did not have a need to use them at 32.3%. They prefer to use a traditional financial service providers at 27.7%. They don't understand how they work at 21.3%. They do not trust them at 11.2%. And they have used fintech in the past but don't want to use it again at 0.8%. The total responses is about 7,539, and respondents could select multiple reasons, and most figures represent non-financial technology users. Well, which is quite interesting numbers indeed, to be quite candid about it. Today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to Mr. Kartik Swaminathan, the founder of Fintastech Group from Mumbai, India, and the brilliant author of this compelling book about the fintech framework of the future, as he shares with us its significant relevance to our digital economy. It's great to have you, Kartik, and welcome to FinCircle.
Thank you, Edgar. Wonderful to talk to you and address your audience and share with them my thoughts on my recent book and fintech.
Let's probably start by laying out the value proposition of your book entitled 3F Future Fintech Framework.
Great. So as the book itself, you know, talks about these three terms, future, fintech, and framework, right? So we all know fintech is gradually becoming a very popular buzzword everywhere, right? It's affecting our life. And when we go and try and understand fintech, the fintech is a multifaceted animal, right? Let me put it this way. There are various perspectives to it. You know, you just cannot understand it straight. And this is typically we faced as even as professionals. So the whole approach to this book has been to make simple fintech simplified and demystified. And it's basically a very quick read to understand and orient to this new reality called fintech, which is going to affect all of us both professionally in our day-to-day life and, you know, and the way we'll probably have our careers in future. So that's the whole genesis, underlying genesis of it.
What is your motivation and inspiration in writing this remarkable book, Kartik?
So the first motivation obviously is, I always wanted to write a book or probably write something which I call as a white paper initially, because in the last few years, I've been closely associated with the technology field, right? And that's something I didn't want to, you know. So I wanted to convert my experience and thoughts in some form of a white paper. But then somehow, my initial research trying to understand about writing a book, I came to a conclusion that probably converting into a book is a good idea. So, there was that mental shift, because typically many of us don't naturally go into writing a book from corporates, typically, Some people do, but then that's at different stages. So I wanted to capture my thoughts, practice, experience, and learnings. And then there are a lot of things in life you want to do, but then I also had a very good timing, because last year, we all know, which was, it was both, this incident, pandemic hit everywhere, and there was, we had a lot of time as professionals, a lot of us, right? So I made use of that time, and that's how this book was born.
Perhaps you can kind of give us, Karthik, a high-level overview on the content and context of this particular book.
Great. So if I have to give you a broader perspective, this book has, as I initially started, this is kind of fintech simplified and demystified. And it just does not just clarify what fintech is for you. It gives you a direction, right? So in life, you need two things. We all are very capable. We will do as long as we have clarity and direction, right? So this book tries to provide that, and it is broken up into three sections. The first section is, it's like, before you get into the depth and understanding it. So I try to break the whole fintech world into 64 themes and trends. That's so the moment you read it, you kind of understood almost what is happening in the fintech sector. And in a very simple manner, right? Even a non-technology person can understand. Even if he's just a graduate, he can understand. I've probably even had instances where people who have been 12th grade pass, they understood it, because people, especially young kids, are very smart nowadays. They read a lot of stuff. So these 64 themes. Then in section two, what I've done is I have provided three frameworks. What are these frameworks? Let me give you an analogy. When you have to, you want to buy clothes, right? But you just don't buy clothes. You have to keep them in places so that it looks good and it is accessible at the right time. So unless you have a very nice wardrobe, buying clothes doesn't make sense. You're getting what I'm saying? So a wardrobe has various sections. So your mind needs to have various sections, and this is what I call framework. So what happens tomorrow? You like a cloth, and you can instantly relate. Oh, I already have four jeans in my wardrobe. I don't need to buy a few jeans. Or probably I have four jeans, but I don't have a black jeans. So I'll buy a black jeans. And that's how, right? So that the structure of the wardrobe helps you even make the right buying decision. Correct? So same way, the point I want to come is, think of it like a framework is like a structure. Now, how do you categorize, classify, and that's what a framework does. So I have classified three frameworks in my book, we will probably discuss that in a little detail later, but section two is about frameworks. And then we talk about four pillars or key aspects in the fintech world, which is in section three. So three sections to the book. In section three, there are four key aspects largely typically you need to know about players, different players in that segment, in the fintech segment. You need to know about regulations. You need to know how pricing and, the likes of those happens. And fourth is how different career alternatives are evolving. So three sections, very crisp and quick read, and it will help you, get a proper perspective on the space. That's how the book is structured.
It is interesting to know, Karthik, the frameworks that you have mentioned, particularly the FDLC for engaging user journeys, the FLAIR, which is the logical architecture, and the FAM, which relates to the future API marketplace. How will this influence strategic direction in the long term for fintech space?
That's a wonderful question, right? you just don't structure anything, right? Just because, let's say you're building a wardrobe, you just because you have wood and slabs, you just don't make compartments, right? There are different compartments for different things. So there is a thought to it. There is a strategic direction to it. So I'm glad that you asked this question. And I'll tell you how. So the first framework here is called FDLC or FinTech Digital Lifecycle. Now, based on my experience, I figured out that every product or solution is an accumulation of different use cases, wherein it starts with customer onboarding and ends with customer offboarding. Any fintech or digital product, even if you make use of a digital e-commerce app, you will have to first register yourself. Or if you do for banking, you'll have to register, do KYC and all. And then you close your account. That's a closure. So that cycle is there. So there are 7 stages and 39 sub-stages, which I've identified in FDLC, which help you create very engaging customer and user journeys. So now that is the why it is a strategic aspect is, unfortunately, today, most people, most of us, when we get into career, we are told that we should focus on customer, but a lot of our frameworks and thoughts are focused on product, not on customer. So this particular framework helps you focus on customers, and product will shape accordingly. Tomorrow, customer need change. You need to innovate, improvise. It will almost 95 to 99% of everything is captured here. Obviously, world is dynamic. Things may change, but that change may be 1 to 5% and very gradual over a few years. So FDLC will help you create engaging customer and user journey and not just focus on product and process. Why I'll tell you that today that is becoming a limitation. So whenever you think of a product, you will start, oh no, it cannot do this, it cannot do that, right? But the moment you start looking at customer journey, you will start looking at requirements in a different way, not as a limitation. So it's a big mental shift, strategic shift. And I think that's what a digital world today needs, right? So that's number one as far as FDLC is concerned, where 7 stages, 39 sub-stages, and the focus shifting from product. I'll repeat, focus is shifting from product and process to customer and user journeys, right? That's FDLC. Now we come out to FLAIR, which is the second framework called FinTech Logical Architecture. Today, again, by my experience, and I'm sure a lot of you youngsters will experience this, and a lot of us who are experienced know this, that many digital projects fail because of lack of cohesion or collaboration between teams, right? We have this thing called breaking the silos and stuff like that. But, good part is we all know it. Today, at least, we are all aware of the fact that silos need to be broken. So how do you do that? You need, again, a framework which will bring the thought process between all stakeholders. See, in a digital product, right from your compliance to marketing, your operations to product, every damn team is part of the stakeholder, right? The business teams, the front-end branch teams. So you need a framework which will help people collaborate, and that's how the FinTech Logical Architecture was born, helping people collaborate. And you can, based on the way I have compartmentalized there, in that framework, it will help you think of classifying your requirements and how different systems will interact with each other. And once you know this, you will be able to manifest it into in form of better documentation, better requirement analysis and stuff like that. And this will eventually lead to that big use problem in the digital and fintech world is it will help you break silos for every organization. That's the big, so this is another strategic shift. FLAIR is enabling. And the third typical strategic shift which I'm foreseeing will happen, which unfortunately is not practiced today, but people have taken steps. So is what I called as FAM, FinTech API Marketplace. I want to be very categorical. This is based on my experience, and I've explained in the book how and why, which will more than convince you that the future is going to, in the digital and fintech space, is going to be driven by fintech API marketplaces. What do I mean by API marketplace? It's like, I'll give you an example of a website. When you make a website today, You book a domain hosting. You'll go to GoDaddy, right? There is a portal where you can book your domain. Then once you do that, you figure out your hosting plan. Then you figure out what content management to use. Within that, you consume various APIs for social media, payment, CAPTCHA, news, right? So today you can very, even a non-techie can today kind of make a website, right? So tomorrow, just like this, there will be an API marketplace. Assuming you want to, four of you as a setup, they want to start a bank, right? Subject to obviously regulatory needs, but technically you'll go to an API marketplace. That marketplace will have all APIs. You want API for KYC, it will have API for KYC, right? This is what you'll do first. Then you want API for loans, it will have API for loan, credit appraisal, right? If you want API for some kind of a risk alert or analytics or robo advisory, investment platform. So you'll consume these APIs and create a story and make an app and just publish it. So why this FinTech API marketplace is helpful in a strategic way? It will solve a big issue with respect to standardization, which is a challenge. Because you have to strike a balance between standardization and differentiation, right? So API marketplace will enable both, which is the beauty. API marketplace will accelerate partnership because it will be faster to integrate and with others. Then there are various aspects like pricing. It will also enable faster build, go to market, lower cost. Then there are many other benefits which I have proposed in the book about the three frame about the FinTech API marketplace. So just a quick repeat. The first framework is FDLC, FinTech Digital Lifecycle, helping you make user journey and you know a very effective user journey, shifting from product and process to customer and user journey. Second is Flare, FinTech Logical Architecture, which will help you break silos. Third is FinTech API Marketplace, which will help set the direction in terms of faster collaboration, faster go-to-market, lower cost. And these are all important challenges today for a effective, for digital and fintech to be more effective, right? So that's the strategic direction which the frameworks in the book tell you.
How does the fintech ecosystem, Karthik, using the fundamentals you've recommended, will adapt to the continuous evolution in the ever-changing market and regulatory demand?
Yeah. So the beauty is, my book is designed as a flow. So, as I said, the one of the catchphrase in my book is, this book is not about knowledge. This book is about understanding. Because today knowledge is available kind of free. If you just Google, you get to know many things. There are issues, obviously, whether it's a valid knowledge or not, but I won't get into that. But I'm saying broadly, we agree knowledge is available free. So, what I've done is, what do you mean by understanding is, it is all parameter-driven thought. So tomorrow, any new regulation comes, you will have an API. So my framework is very fluid that way. It will adapt to most changes in the market. It doesn't restrict you. So it will, I'm quite sure, at least for the next 5-10 years, it will easily be adoptable almost 90-95% plus the way it is, right? And so, another aspect is obviously the way I have simplified the understanding, right? And the way I just spoke to you about how it breaks the silos and stuff like that. So I focus more on that rather than focusing just on regulations. Another thing I've done is everything I've broken very generically. For example, every country has this challenge with privacy norms. So and every country has different approaches to privacy, variations. But what I've done is I've broken it up generically because, and whatever you read. So I have a section on regulation. And if you read that, you can adopt and learn in any country because, for example, in privacy, I've broken up privacy into every privacy will need a consent architecture. So irrespective of country, the consent architecture, now how the consent architecture works may differ in every country. In privacy, you will have encryption. You'll have storage of data for few months, years. Now, in some country, they may say 2 years. Some country may say 5 years you store the data. I'm just saying. So, but I have broken in a very generic way everything. That is another reason why this framework will be lasting for a longer period of time, irrespective of the dynamism and changes which are happening. So I took care to structure the thoughts in a way that this will remain for a longer period of time.
The digital footprint, Karthik, that has been highlighted on your book is categorically considered one of the most important identity attributes of the future. In view of this, how will we maintain its security so as not to compromise its data integrity?
Very relevant. Very relevant question, in especially in digital world. And I'm not saying very relevant because the question is relevant. I'm saying it's very relevant for every individual to know. Okay, so this issue is not about just bankers or technologists or fintech professionals. Even if you are a user of a mobile app, you need to know this. And what do I mean? So, and then obviously there are two levels to it. One is at the individual level and then at the organization and government level. But I'll tell you about individual level. I'm sure in every country today, all of us receive notifications from our banks and even mails from our banks, which talk make us aware of be careful of phishing, don't share your OTP, correct? And Edgar, you yourself have been a banker, right? Tell me, 15 years back, did you think these kind of activities bank will do?
Well, 15 years ago, it's a totally a new idea, to be honest.
So today, this activity or awareness and education has become a big role. The point I want to make is this has become a big important role where bank is communicating to the customer about how he needs to be aware and take precautions. So security, in my opinion, in a big way, will happen through education and awareness. That's the point I want to make. You said, right, how in this scenario, the integrity. Because if you notice, most of the cases, it happens because of some challenges at the client end, where he was not aware or he made some error or mistake, right? Right. So that's at one level. Second level, at the government level or at the organization level, today the nature of frauds are very sophisticated. So they need to be cautious. So they need to have frameworks which are AI, ML driven, right? So again, fintech and technology comes and plays a big role. So at the individual level, the focus is on awareness, practice, communication, right? And at the bigger level, it is by taking, again, internal policy measures, having technologies like AI and ML, which will monitor a lot of things, you know, and tackle and also look at some sophisticated kind of frauds. We are talking about frauds which are compromising individual. Tell me, as a banker, you must have, this happened even ages back, is there were frauds where people will take a small amount of money from every account. With technology, this is possible. Now, these things, customer will not be able to notice. This has to be noticed and managed as a pattern at the organization and government level. So they need to take measures for that. So both these levels plus use of technology and systems. And today we have all this OTP, 12-factor authentication and all. So it's a mix of all these measures. Even in cards today, you can hotmark your card. So if you don't want your card to be used for ATM withdrawal or international usage, so many banks allow you to do that, right? So features are getting built. So there are ways this will be handled, but it will be only effective with use of education, awareness, and then some of these measures which they need to take, the organizations and bank, government need to take using technology.
Data analytics has been highlighted as well, Karthik, as one of the essential elements of this particular fintech framework. What are the contributing factors that somehow lead to this conclusion?
So data analytics is like, you know, so when we discuss about anything, let's say we talk about body, our own body, we'll usually talk about body parts, your eyes, arms, ears, right? But your blood is circulating in the whole body. So to give an analogy, the data or analytics is like the blood. So the flow of, so every body part will only function if the blood is moving properly. and if it is able to perceive, and you know, that's what analytics do on top of data. So data, to just draw a very quick analogy, that's how important data and analytics is going to be. It's going to drive almost everything, because if you don't have basic data and analytics, you cannot empower a lot of things which you are visualizing you can do with digital and fintech and technology. That said, I've also identified in my book very specific pitfalls, right? For example, one quick pitfall which many organizations do is this data scientist they want to hire, right? Data scientist, there is nothing wrong in hiring a data scientist, because they are the ones who will build models and analyze and throw a lot of good insights to you. But you need to understand that if you don't have proper data, no data analyst or models or scientist will be able to effectively work. And what I've identified one aspect in my book is the problem in the industry is that the science of data is really, it's very mature in whatever way it is currently. I'm sure it will improvise over, but what it is very mature even now. So it's not about data science or models or analytics, but the biggest challenge is the data itself is not proper in most places. I'll give you an instance. A lot of us have used Excel sheet and drawn pie charts, graphs. If in the Excel sheet, if you don't display the data in proper columns, will your pie and bar come properly? It won't. So that is the way I want to say it. The whole data part is getting ignored and we are just talking. So that is more of a operational and managerial problem, and you know, hiring issues and stuff like that. That needs to be addressed in a very big way. But yes, data is a very important aspect, and I've highlighted various aspects of it. For example, one is the data, second is the analytic, and then another ignored part is the visualization of the data. Right. So these 3-4 parts. So I've tried to give a very good picture in my book about that aspect and how important data and analytics is through various perspectives, including the manpower, hiring, training.
What differentiates your book, Kartik, as compared to other fintech related books in the market today?
Yeah, that's a very pertinent question. Anyone who wants to read in the fintech space, he'll probably ask, right? I have 10 books. What is it, right? So I don't want to compare myself with others, not as a cliched statement I want to make. The reason I want to make is, first is all those books have been written by experienced people. They are all good in their own way. But they have been written, most of them have been written on specific topics, right? RPA, sometimes some are technical, some talk about blockchain, most of it are like that. And some are broader without naming authors, but then people have written about the new age bank, neo banks, digital transformation and all. So people have written, and they're all pretty decent books from experienced folks. So I won't say no. But what happens, I mentioned one thing earlier on during our discussion, is my book is focusing more on understanding rather than knowledge. Okay. So once you read my book, you develop an understanding, because tomorrow in your career, you're going to learn new things. But if you know, have the understanding, you can maneuver through it. Right. So instead of focusing on just sharing knowledge, I have focused in developing an understanding. Besides that, the uniqueness where I've stressed and put a lot of effort on is I've tried to simplify everything. I've not tried to use heavy jargons and words. Obviously, some places are unavoidable because they are part of the lingo. But as I said, even a normal graduate or even a, you know, plus very easily understand, anyone who even uses a normal mobile app can easily understand. And other beauties, it covers everything in fintech. So I hardly leave anything for you for wherein the understanding doesn't develop. And the best final part is it's very quick and fast to read. I think between 5 to 8 hours over 1 or 2 days, or if you want to read 2 hours a day over a couple of weekends, you can finish the book, right? So that way it is. So these are some of the benefits in the book. And it's, as I said, fintech simplified and demystified.
From your perspective, Kartik, what are the things we are doing effectively well on the fintech space at this point in time?
So obviously, there are a lot of good things happening. The first point I want to make is with respect to open banking, a lot of good things are happening. Though there are different approaches, I'll give you a very good similarity. Say UK is following a data-driven approach to open banking. Okay, India started open banking rather than going to data. It focused on the use case, and payment was the first area they targeted. They made payment, it's kind of a pseudo or a different approach to open banking India has taken. Okay, so then there are different other ways people are thinking they may want to do open banking by digitizing everything. So I think even Philippines, for that matter, has very recently issued licenses specifically for digital banks. Very recently, I think in the last 6 months, 1 year, all this action is happening, and few banks even got a license now, right? So different countries are taking good actions. They are very positive. They're also learning. And what do I mean by learning is, say in UK, I really don't know, though they have democratized the system, how many players are profitable and are they heading towards profitability? Are players happy with what is happening, right? So I'm sure they'll keep doing frequent reviews, making changes to the policies, but people are taking different approaches because the first thing in digital world is you need to try and experiment, and that is happening. That's the beauty of it. And many models. And even if you take countries like Kenya, they came out with M-Pesa for financial inclusion. So India is also doing, India has taken another different approaches. India is, say, on the open banking, they have also different approach, but they have also made a very good country stack. India has a country stack for everything, for account aggregation, for data sharing. They have one stack which is based on DigiLocker. So they are creating a centralized repository where you can store everything, right? So tomorrow, many use cases can come. So they are empowering these ecosystems. So many things are happening. So as I said, it's a learning game, and everyone is doing things which are right. In fact, few people have even taken steps to make the API marketplace. So Singapore is building APIX, which is called API. The intent is to build an API marketplace. And I have actually given a much deeper vision of the whole API marketplace. And I know for sure, you know, what countries like Singapore is doing, are basically aligned towards that direction. And other countries should follow. So you should learn, countries should learn from each other and adopt and stuff like that. And I think everyone is doing wonderful. Only thing, the only pitfall I see is, I think regulators and players need to be fast. That is a small, you know, we are probably not as fast as, because digital world, speed is relevant. Even if you fail, fail with speed, right? So they are doing almost everything right, learning, improvising, learn from each other, so, because everyone is doing things, but we need to just do it fast. I think that's the only, you know, both the good side, and to make the good side more effective, I'm saying make it faster. That's all I would request.
Given your considerable experience on fintech framework initiatives, Kartik, any word of advice that you can give with regards to this subject matter?
Great. So obviously, the first thing is, the fintech is not just a buzzword and a jargon. I'll first start with that, because a lot of us, you know, probably get attracted just to that. So no, you get attracted to it, but understand why it is important. It's actually, besides having career and profession, this is, fintech is going to affect all our daily lives tomorrow. Because we're going to, you know, I tell you, right, be it investing, making bill payment, to making payments. You see, these are almost 80% of your day-to-day activities will be this, right? In terms of the commercial part of it, right? The rest could be maybe mail checking and all. So the most important thing is, this is going to impact. So you should know about it. This is my first advice, right? Because when something is going to impact you, you should know about it. Like today, we are not molecular biologists or virus specialists, but today everyone is knowing about the virus, right? unfortunately in the wrong way, right? But I'm saying this is actually impacting your day-to-day life, so have at least some knowledge about it, right? If you don't know, maybe you don't know driving, but you should know what a car is, right? I'm just saying, getting it. So you may not drive, but that way it is. So that's one aspect of it. And I want to break some myths. FinTech is not about just finance and some technology. FinTech and digital world are converging. So FinTech just, so even if you are going to be in health tech, you're going to be in travel and tourism tomorrow, you need to know about FinTech. Any other segment, almost every damn segment other than core engineering segment, unless you are into building rocket engines or maybe airline engines, right? Even there, IoT and digital will work, but then not direct FinTech. So every industry is going to impact FinTech. So you need to know how the linkages are. It will help you. As I said, it will help you think, orient, and once clarity is there in your mind, you can travel. You know, so that way I want to tell you that you get to know and then look at those strategic cues which I give in the book, where this book will help you shift from your product orientation to customer and from process orientation to journeys. The moment you can make the shift, rest will become very important, very easy for you, you know. So to that extent, and then gather some skills which are softer skills, like today we are doing this podcast video skills. So I mentioned that in my book in Careers. Today probably it may so happen that given that digital is happening and converging with FinTech and every other industry, you need to have these digital skills which will become like common for everyone, right? We used to be taught letter writing in our school days, if you remember, right? So in my opinion, video making is becoming basic today. You're getting what I'm trying to tell you. So what I want to tell you, to orient yourself to the digital economy, if you have these skills now, tomorrow any job, it will become easier. Obviously, you need to learn a little bit here and there, but the base is there with you. And see, if I've taught you letter writing, you can even write an email, right? So that way. So these are some soft skills which I like to tell you and talk to you about in the whole book, and get oriented towards some of these softer skills in the digital space, have a broader perspective and see how things are converging. And to that extent, even my book will help.
Very well said. Let's invite our podcast listening audience, Kartik, on how will they get their book or your wonderful book, and what are the most logical way of reaching out or contacting you?
Great. I very keenly look forward to that. So I'll first talk about the book, where it is available. So globally, the book is available on Amazon, both in physical and Kindle version. This is also available on many other, I think in Apple, it is available. It is also available on Google Play Store, I think in Google Books also it's available. So these are some areas which are available, or you could simply do a Google search on the book, 3F Future FinTech Framework, and you will get to know what are locally available options there and search. That's one aspect of it as far as book is concerned. 3F Future FinTech Framework, available on Amazon and options like Apple, Google and others, both in physical and Kindle versions. As far as getting in touch with me is concerned, I am accessible on LinkedIn. Kartik, K-A-R-T-I-K, Swaminathan. You can just search for it, and Kartik Swaminathan Fintastic or Kartik Swaminathan 3F Future FinTech Framework. You could see a lot of articles and links. So LinkedIn link will also come. I'm there in LinkedIn. I'm in Twitter. My Twitter handle is IAMKARTIK, Kartik. I am Kartik. And then there is this new app called KOOPU. I'm there on Poo also. And then many other social media. Today, it's become inevitable. And you can also mail me at futurefintechframework@gmail.com. Happy to connect, and if you have any queries, thoughts, happy to interact and provide you insights, perspective. So the email ID is futurefintechframework@gmail.com.
Thanks so much, Kartik, for sharing us the valuable insights of your exceptional book, and we wish you great success in the future.
Thank you, Edgar. It was great talking to you, and some of these questions, I think, when you answer these questions, you tend to think a lot, and I really enjoyed answering questions and conveying your hope. They are able to read the book and probably benefit much more than what they probably can look forward to.
This podcast episode is made possible by Fintastack Group from Mumbai, India. We would like to express our great appreciation to Mr. Karthik Swaminathan for sharing us his valuable insights on his remarkable book, 3F Future Fintech Framework. Grab your copy today, as this is now available on Amazon, Kindle, both physical and ebook, as well as the other digital options. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Podcasts, and Anchor.fm. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.